This is Not Half Bad, your podcast covering Rutgers and St. John's basketball's return to prominence, or at least some sort of relevance. This is Norman Rose of Rumble in the Garden, your St. John's blog.
And I'm Dave White of On the Banks, the Rutgers blog.
And we are here to talk about the beginning, or the soon-to-be beginning, of the next basketball season.
I am psyched. Woo! I wish the NCAA would make their decisions on J.J. Moore and Junior Itu so they could get ready for the new season, but I'm doing good.
Wait, so now Rutgers has a number of new players, we know,
yes.
And you'll tell us about them later, but
right.
Some of the drama over the summer was about whether Kerwin Okoro could come back east and be eligible to play immediately. You know, he filed for a hardship waiver.
Right.
Specifically because his, what, father and cousin both died?
Father
and brother, yes.
Within, like, 2 months of each other.
Which is crazy. You know, my heart goes out to him because that's, I don't even know how I deal. I wouldn't be playing.
No.
I would have quit basketball for a year at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, he wants to play, and that's, and honestly, you know, being active is one of the best ways to, you know, get over things like that as you go through the process. You know, you have a support system, you have you know, a thing to do instead of just sitting around and brooding and thinking, how on earth could this happen? And, you know, cursing, you know, your God, if you're a God fearing person. But yeah, it took the NCAA a while to reverse their ruling and decide that he should play, which is, you know, good on their part. Let's applaud them for that. But
exactly,
you're still,
but
they're still waiting on JJ Moore, the wing from Pittsburgh. I didn't know about Junior Itu. Tell me about the Junior Itu story.
Itu, it appears, and I'm just going on what I've read, from Zagoria, is he's a partial qualifier as we speak. He's academically eligible. He's enrolled, and taking classes, it appears, but, they're waiting, I guess, let me see if I can find the article. It said something about they're looking into his time in Africa to see amateurism, that sort of thing.
So kind of like the Orlando Sanchez thing last year.
I don't know. It's tough to talk about because I don't know the whole story. I hate to – I'm basically speculating. And the article, you know, it was one sentence long about this.
Mm-hmm.
So it was during the – they interviewed Eddie Jordan and they had a quote from Jordan. And then you kind of had to parse things together from that. So he's on campus – and Jordan in the article said he was expecting a decision soon, but has yet to get one. Here it is. Rutgers awaiting word on Moore. Itu, what does it say? And here's the Eddie Jordan quote. Obviously, JJ, meaning Moore, is eligible. It's just his waiver. And Junior is a qualifier. It's just about his experiences over in Africa, and that's it. And then he said, hopefully they'll hear by the end of the week, but who knows? That's from the Adam Zagoria article. So,
okay. Well, in the experience of St. John's last year, one of the things that the NCAA took some time to rule on, and this was in the beginning of the season, was how various experiences would be viewed in the eyes of the NCAA. Orlando Sanchez, part of the problem was that they thought that he should be ruled as, you know, because he's 25, there's like a years of eligibility thing that you can have after age 21. I don't know if Junior Itu is that old. Is he?
I don't know.
21. So that's one issue. And then another issue was experience and whether, you know, a guy had set foot on a campus or whether he'd played a few minutes professionally. You know, there are guys who've lost a year of eligibility for things like, you know, playing in a scrimmage. So... Mm-hmm. You know, the rules are interesting, you know, and I think that there's a lot of debate about whether they're fair and whether they really promote, student athletes being able to move around and have some agency in what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, good luck to that because it stinks to see an athlete get dinged for kind of some crap, you know. And honestly, even the playing, you know, a few professional minutes abroad in a low-level league, to me, doesn't seem like it really, you know, it. I mean, I don't think it busts the sham of amateurism any more than anything else
right,
the NCAA does.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what's going to happen. I know just Googling Junior Itu's age, Deadspin has like 3 articles on this kid.
Really?
Yeah, that the articles, the one says, the high school says he's 18. They found a birth certificate that he's 21. Apparently Deadspin has a bug up their butt about Junior Itu. Mm-hmm. So he's either 20 or 21 or 18, according to the article. So that could play into it. Who knows?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to read into this because I didn't know it was such a big thing. This is what you get when Rutgers leaves the conference. Yeah, caring so much.
when you scramble to try and fill, 9 roster spots.
Yeah.
In a summer.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah.
So how do you think they did with filling the roster spots, and who's on the team now?
Well, we talked about in a previous podcast that, Jerome Seegers came back and is eligible to play immediately. He had transferred to Auburn, but changed his mind. Miles Mack and Kadeem Jack are still around, juniors. They have some depth if Itu and Moore are eligible. They're 10 players deep now, but they'd be 12 players deep. And they have some veteran leadership. They brought in a couple JUCO players, a wing, Craig Brown, who I don't know much about. He was a Mike Rice recruit that Jordan was able to convince to come anyway.
And he's better than Vincent Garrett?
Oh, Lord, I can only hope.
Vincent Garrett transferred, right?
Vincent Garrett transferred and got immediate eligibility in, like, Wisconsin Green Bay.
Okay.
So he's gone. So they have Craig Brown. They have – who else did they bring in? They brought in a junior college point guard, Devon Campbell, who played for a little while at UTEP and then transferred to a junior college and is now eligible this year to play. He'll back up at point. He's apparently – via the summer league, a quick little guard.
Okay. And it's Devon with a D apostrophe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
stylish.
That's right. So it'll, and they brought in Kerwin Okoro, who's now eligible. Mm-hmm. 6'5". He'll play the fourth guard.
More of a bruiser, kind of like a hard work kind of guard than a skilled guy. Yeah.
I think they want to use him, especially this year. He's only a sophomore. To really slow down the opposing team's big guards.
Mm-hmm. He didn't do much at Iowa State.
No, but he only played 9 games, something like that. True. So, and then they brought in Moore and Itu, and I think Moore is the key to the season.
He's a heck of a scorer when he's on.
Yeah, and he brings balance to the team. He steps in for the Eli Carter transfer, but brings an extra 4 inches.
Yeah.
6 inches.
I do think that one of the things with Eli Carter is that it's very hard to say, you know, we're going to depend on a 6'2", quote unquote, guard. he was a good shooter, but sometimes he just seemed like it was very hard for him to get his shot off. You know, watching him against like St. John's zone, there were times where he just looked like it was just like, who's taking the shots here? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think Moore brings that veteran. He'll be a senior. Mm-hmm. And he brings balance. So that's huge. I mean, if he's eligible, then your starting 5 is Wally Judge, Kadeem Jack, JJ Moore, Miles Mack, and Jerome Seegers, which is a talented and veteran starting 5.
Do you think that any of those guys, I'm thinking of like Jack and Wally Judge, do you think those guys will step up their game now that Mike Rice is gone? Because, you know, people will say sometimes that there is a psychological effect of coaching too. Some people really respond to, you know, having somebody shove and yell at them, and other people respond to a different approach. And it seems like Eddie Jordan is a different approach, right?
Yeah. Oh, very much so from what I hear. But, well, look at Wally Judge, who's never, lived up to his quote unquote promise from high school. And who did he play for? He played for Frank Martin and he played for Mike Rice. Mm-hmm. So this is a completely – has to be. I mean, I haven't been to a practice or anything, but has to be a completely different, you know, approach to being coached in college.
Yeah, it is his chance. I mean, maybe he's the kind of guy who needs to be cajoled more than yelled at. Maybe he needs a back rub.
Yeah, and it's possible. Might help. Might help. You never know. I mean, when Gary Waters coached at Rutgers his first year, all he talked about was hugging everybody. So,
well, Gary Waters, anyway,
hey, he hugged everybody that first year and they got 18 wins. So
that's true. And honestly, Gary Waters ended up being, ended up being in the pantheon of the last, what, like five or so Rutgers coaches, he might be the best, right?
Oh God, yes.
I mean, who was the naked free throws guy?
Kevin Bannon.
Yeah, there was Kevin Bannon, and who came after him?
Waters. That's why he was hugging everybody.
Bannon, Waters, and then Fred Hill and Rice, and now
Eddie Jordan.
Yeah, who was before Bannon?
Bob Wenzel? Oh, no, wait, yeah, Wenzel. We're going now back a little before my time.
Yeah.
So. Because Bannon, my first year was Bannon's first year.
I'll throw in one more thing about J.J. Moore. He's an interesting scorer. You know, there are games where he really goes off, and there are games where he really disappears.
Yeah.
And one wonders if that has something to do with Pittsburgh's depth. But I've always thought that he's a guy that should have emerged as a fairly big-time scorer. He's a wing who is a little underregarded coming out of, I think it was Brentwood High out in Long Island.
Yeah,
and St. John's really wanted him, and St. John's was actually on him early, but then he blew up a little bit and decided to go to Pitt, and then he's just sort of, you know, bounced around. Like, he's like on the edge of stardom, but, you know, doesn't get minutes because his defense is a little shoddy. He sometimes has some bad shooting nights. I find him very intriguing.
I do too. I think, and again, I'm just going on quotes of what he says. I think the way Pittsburgh ran an offense hindered him,
because
he lit up Rutgers from deep this year and a couple years. Like, he was always a guy that worried me, but he always came off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason against Rutgers, he always got hot from three, and it probably had something to do with Rutgers' defense and size.
Mm-hmm.
But he talked about, you know, wanting to get out and run. So he might be great in the open court. Mm-hmm. And if Rutgers is willing to push the tempo because they need scoring, he might really shine.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He's intrigued. I really think he's the key. This decision is the key to this season anyway.
Cool.
Plus it opens up a scholarship for recruiting purposes. Mm-hmm. So. But yeah, I mean, that's what we're looking at. A team that starting five could be very veteran and, you know, have some talent coming off the bench, but inexperienced talent. I'm interested to get some reports from Rutgers practice and that sort of thing. But what about St. John's? What are we looking at? How was the summer?
One thing that they did, they went on a European tour, played five games over the course of, you know, a week and a half.
Did Steve Lavin constantly point out Big Ben in Parliament?
No, they didn't go to that part of Europe. They went to Italy and France and Spain. And yes, Steve Lavin took a lot of Instagrams of really beautiful things, some of which I've seen. His Instagram feed, by the way, Coach Lav 64, is pretty like... It's kind of awesome. It's he's a guy who really seems to have taken to that and to social networking. You know, I think he likes to talk. He likes to communicate.
His Twitter is great.
Yeah, his Twitter is great. You know, and I you know, for a while I thought that maybe he wasn't, you know, actively involved. It was one of those, like, you know, Stafford does it kind of things. But no, I think he's pretty involved. So yeah, so they went to they took the team to Europe. There were a few injuries, so there were some guys that they didn't get to see. But they played against a few pro teams, one that was sort of like the, you know, the third string squad of one team, but others that were, you know, pretty top end teams that had played, you know, I think it was Evro had beaten Wisconsin or Alabama, something like that. Ruin had played against some other Division I teams that you've heard of. And they won three games, lost two. There, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff. I wrote about the takeaways from the European trip. And they were interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not for a team like this, it's less about figuring out who can play than it is figuring out how to integrate the new crucial pieces. So what you see from St. John's is that they have a squad that has a lot of base pieces that you know about. You Sir Dominic Poynter, who does a little bit of everything, and Jakar Sampson, who does his scoring thing, but then you have a bunch of pieces that need to reintegrate, like D'Angelo Harrison and his scoring, Orlando Sanchez and his actual post presence, Chris Obekpa, and whether he's going to get better on offense, and Jamal Branch, who, you know, in the next few weeks, I will be talking a little bit about how I think that we haven't seen the best of Jamal Branch yet.
I think you're loaded at point guard. I said this to you this week
yeah.
with Branch and Jordan. Yeah. I think you're in good shape.
And I think so far it seems that they do slightly different things. Jamal Branch certainly has a stop and pop kind of game, and his passing sometimes is a little too fancy, but if he can stay healthy, and that's been a little bit of a problem for him at St. John's, you know, he's gotten a little dinged up, and I think at times he seems to play a little tentatively, but when he's playing with fire and force, I think, you know, he's the top 50 guard that St. John's got in, you know, the transfer from Texas A&M. Right. Raishi Jordan is a top 25 guard who is 6'4", long, strong, and can get his shot. And I think that's important for St. John's too. So, well, yeah, what we're seeing basically is that there are a lot of new pieces, and in the style of offense that they play, the team does need two or three players who can just get their shot.
Yeah.
So having, you know, Harrison next to Branch and Jordan is crucial. You know, Branch and Jordan and Phil Green can all, you know, get their shot off the dribble. D'Angelo Harrison kind of can, but you really want him to spot up and just like make and make plays. Besides that, they also have Max Hooper coming in that they're hoping to be the 3-point threat that Marc-Antoine Borgo was not. He's a 6 foot.
You loved him, Borgo.
You know, I still think that there's a better Borgo out there, and I think that there are a lot of little things that he can do. I don't know that, you know, there's a real lack of consistency when he did get time, and I don't think you know, just like in life, you only get a certain number of chances to prove that you can do something, you know, and if your mindset isn't such that you're able to take advantage of those chances, things do pass you by, opportunities pass you by, and that might be what happened with him, you know. No, I was just going to say he got open shots, he just didn't hit them. You know, there were a couple of games where he was hot and a couple of games where he was very much not.
Right. How do they view Jordan as a point guard or a combo?
Point guard, I think. Well, at least that's what they're saying. And one of the interesting things to see is how Steve Lavin will manage that foursome at guard, because D'Angelo Harrison was last year training to play a little bit of point guard, or at least learn to get his shot off a little better. I don't know that he'll be doing as much of that this year. I think he might end up being more of a, you know, go and finish it kind of guard. Phil Green played point guard. I don't know that he'll necessarily play as much point guard. He might play a little bit off the ball, and we'll see a little bit different game from him. Then you have Jamal Branch, who's definitely a point, but then Raishi Jordan, who is a scoring point. And I don't know that you want to necessarily, or I don't know. I don't know if they'll play him with Jamal Branch. It seems like two guys who are going to dominate the ball a little bit too much for good ball movement. But it might work. I don't know.
You never know. I mean, I think something like that, you got to see how practice and the players, you know, the games. Yeah. What's the best case and worst case scenario now before practice even started in your head for St. John's?
All right. Best case scenario is interesting because you have this deep team in a league that doesn't really have a top and a bottom. There are no Louisville's and Syracuse's at top. Even, you know, Georgetown is good, but Georgetown doesn't have Otto Porter. Marquette is good, but they're at least one or two of their freshmen have to come out and be a star. I believe Buzz Williams can do that, but that doesn't make them into the monster that is Syracuse. I want to say that, you know, there's a best case that has them reaching the Final Four, but I don't see it.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying. What I'm saying is that with the level of talent that they've brought in, and you know, that's arguable too, because I think for, you know, getting to something like a Final Four, you really want like a top 15, top 20 sort of player. You know, a guy who's like an NBA guy. Yeah. And then you can say, oh, this team really should go pretty far.
Right.
And you also want like a very experienced, you know, tournament coach who's gone very far and knows how to get very far. No, that's not a knock on Lavin, but it's just saying that there are guys like Tom Izzo who, you know how to push the right buttons when
that's
it's time
what
to
they
push
do.
The buttons.
Yeah.
And Lavin does push the right buttons, but not to that you know, Final Four level. So yeah, I guess the ceiling would be, and this is like a crazy ceiling, would be an Elite Eight run. I think this team should make the NCAA tournament. I think there's enough talent. I think there's enough depth that there's no real excuse of youth or of, oh, we don't have enough guys, but there are a lot of things that this team needs to improve on. They need to find a way to actually, you know, get more than 2 points at a time when they score, you know, whether it's through the free throw or through the 3-point shot. They need to have a consistent defensive presence in all games. And they generally do, just against, you know, the higher level teams, the Georgetowns and Marquettes. They also have to maintain that force. And sometimes they're going to have to outscore somebody. And they could not do that last year. They were great at hanging with a team for about the first half. And then for the second half, you know, it's not really a war of attrition, but, you know, talent does rise, and the other team will find a 3-minute stretch where they're hitting shots, and a team has to be able to respond. You know, you have to have a guy who can be like, well, forget this, I'm gonna go score 10 points in the next, like, you know, 10 minutes. You have to have somebody who can get buckets, and St. John's didn't really have an effective get buckets style last year.
Yeah, you hope that's Harrison, but who knows?
Well, it can't just be Harrison. Well, I think one of the reasons he was frustrated last year is because he was one guy trying to get points. It's very easy to key in on a guy who's trying to get points when you know nobody else can reliably get buckets. Or at best, you know, they're going to hit a long 2-point shot at like 46%, you know?
Yeah.
That, you know, you take your chances with that over a guy who can get hot and nail shots from the three, so you double him, you know, you shade him, you force him to the left. And if D'Angelo Harrison has somebody else on the court, then somebody else can draw some of that attention, leaving him singled up. If this St. John's team can spread the floor enough and force teams to play man-to-man defense, they can tear a team up because they're that kind of athletic. But if you can just zone them, I mean, and they don't shoot, and they don't want to shoot, you know, they're easy to defend.
Right. And I think they showed that at times last year. What was it? Oh, God. Was it the Marquette game where they had that ridiculous comeback? Or Notre Dame?
Probably Marquette, because it wasn't the second Notre Dame game. It certainly was not. The first Notre Dame game, they played pretty well more in the first half. The second half, they hung on. In the Marquette game, though, they played with fire, and they really came back pretty hard. Yeah,
they were down 15 or something like that with under 10 left, and they put on the press and really they won at the buzzer.
Yeah, and Marquette likes to play man-to-man, and I think that was a factor, too. You know, Marquette was like, sure, we'll man you up because they are as athletic, but, you know, St. John's, you know, in that open court, you don't want to mess with that team, you know? Christian Jones also came out and played a very solid forward. You know, he went and got rebounds, which is something that this team desperately needs somebody to do. They have to force teams to play man-to-man, you know, and that's where guys like Max Hooper are very important.
Right.
I'll also add that one of the things that they did over the summer, and we'll see if we see it during the year, is that at times they would play Marc-Antoine Bourgault and Max Hooper on the court at the same time on opposite wings. That spreads the floor amazingly because you still have to watch out for Bourgault. You can't just shade towards Hooper. So if you move the ball well, inside out, side, you know.
Yeah.
One of those guys can get a shot. Hooper doesn't seem to need much room, but we'll see in real game action.
Yeah, we will. So, and it's I think St. John's has a lot of potential, but I think they're going to have to really – and they've most of them – Jordan's the only new player.
Mm-hmm.
So they shouldn't have too much trouble gelling.
One would hope. I mean, and I don't think so, and I think that's part of that's part of the purpose of that European trip. You know, it's reintegrating guys who, you know, had fallen out of the rotation for one reason or another, you know. I do think still, you know, Chris Obekpa has to come with some sort of offense, and then Orlando Sanchez has to provide at least a semblance of a post presence. I know a lot of people talk about him as if he's some kind of next coming NBA player, but I have a hard time. I honestly have a hard time believing that, because if you were an NBA player and you're 25, somebody would have found you and brought you to the NBA. Which is not to say that he can't be a good college player. You know, he's physically mature. He, in junior college, rebounded very well, blocked some shots. He was a real presence. He can run the floor. That kind of guy could be amazing at St. John's if he's if the guards do find him, and if he integrates well into the system, you know, gets his picks, you know, and guys are looking out for him. So I think that's another big factor. Just all these little pieces have to come together to one, because St. John's last year was a team that offensively operated in this range between just outside the paint and just inside the three-point line. And you can't do that in college basketball.
No.
That's too easy to defend. You could just like post like three guys that are just like waving their hands going, come on, take a shot, waka waka.
Shoot it, let him shoot it.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, all you had to do really was like, was pack the paint. And you know, get in front of the guard who was trying to drive, and be like, "Yeah, take your shot from there. That's cool. Right. Phil Green, take your runner. He might be good at the runner, and he's very good at it. But you can't you can't thrive on that kind of shot."
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So, but practice is starting. We're going to see some news soon.
Yep, and you know, we'll be able to play Allen Iverson saying, "Talking about practice?
Absolutely.
Come on."
And although I think we're more shocked at starting this early rather than
not wanting to go. At all, yeah.
I think both teams this year have a lot of upside. I think St. John's has a bigger upside than Rutgers, but I think if everything goes Rutgers' way, it's possible they could be a bubble team.
Ooh.
Yeah, bubble. No, not making a run, you know.
On the power bubble. Of Jerome Seegers?
On the power of having if Moore is eligible. Mm-hmm. And having talent and some veterans.
Happy talent.
Happy talent. And
like,
yes,
exactly. Like Bob Vila, you know, right. Happy trees, you know, happy talent.
Happy trees. Oh, yeah, not Bob Vila. Bob Vila was this old house.
Oh, yeah, no. Then I'm thinking of Bob Ross.
Bob Ross, yes.
Bob Ross, happy trees.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, I mean, I think Rutgers can be a bubble team. You know, if everybody's eligible and ready to play, mm-hmm. and they gel to a new system. So Jordan's already talking about, in that same article where I was talking about E2 and more, he's already talking about Mack and Seegers maxing out their three-point shots.
Good.
So he might want to live by the three, die by the three, and we'll take it from there.
Look, if you have less talent, you know, that's the joy of college basketball, is that the three-point shot is such an equalizer.
Yeah.
You know, you just, you know, if you have a team that can put them up and hit them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why Creighton is Creighton, honestly. I mean, that's a conversation that we might have another day, too.
We'll talk about our conferences.
Yeah, we talk about our conferences and our schedules. Because Creighton's interesting in the sense that, you know, they've been playing against Missouri Valley competition. And, you know, I know that they've had good tournament runs, but there's something different between playing for a one-time tournament game and then playing in a conference where everybody's scouting you, and you learn a little bit more with each game and with each scout, you know, because you know who they're playing against, you know. You see what different teams try against them, and then you start to learn. You start to figure out, all right, that works, that doesn't work, that works, that doesn't work, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree. There's a lot of new teams that are going to be in for either rude awakenings or stunning successes in both conferences.
Mm-hmm.
So this was not half bad. The very first episode previewing the 2013-2014 season, talking about Rutgers and St. John's basketball. I'm Dave from onthebanks.com, the Rutgers blog, and
I'm Norman, Rumble in the Garden, the St. John's blog. We promise to do better next time. Thank you for listening.
But this time was not half bad.
And we will see you next time on iTunes or on the blogs, or, you know, come out and say some things to us on Twitter as well. That's Ecoast Bias on Twitter.
And I'm at Dave_White.